This is The Fight Back, thefightback.org. Reporting from the streets of D.C., I'm Pete Tucker. Last year, D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray went to jail when he, along with 40 others, committed an act of civil disobedience in order to highlight the District of Columbia's inability to spend its own tax dollars as it chooses. Also on that day, April 11th, a dozen activists were arrested outside the office of House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, who proposed cuts to the district's HIV/AIDS funding as well as needle exchange program. The group, which included Mayor Gray and six council members, has received light sentences, amounting mostly to no more than $50 fines. The HIV/AIDS activists, however, are facing more serious charges. On the steps of the John A. Wilson building this week, Matthew Kavanaugh, one of the arrested HIV/AIDS activists, called on U.S. Attorney Ron Machen to drop the charges.
On April 11th, a number of activists, myself included, took direct action. We're not going to comment directly on the case for which we are being prosecuted, but we will say that people took action because 2 million lives were on the line, because the ability of the District of Columbia to do good public health by doing syringe exchanges was on the line. These are the kind of things that are life and death decisions that are being made, we think, massively wrongly by Republicans in this Congress. To have the Obama-appointed U.S. attorney then turn around and prosecute activists with a charge that could have up to 6 months in prison, right, for a free speech case is crazy. To require 3 negative drug tests for people that did exactly what Mayor Gray did, exactly what Council Chairman Brown did, exactly what various members of our community did, to require that they be drug tested for free speech is outrageous. And then further, to decide to full-on prosecute someone because they can't comply with your requirement of 3 negative drug tests because their doctor ordered them to use a medicine is increasingly ridiculous and must stop. We are asking U.S. Attorney Ron Machen to drop the charges immediately and let us all go.
Later in the program, Matthew Kavanaugh will be joining us here in the WEACT radio studio to discuss the charges against him and the other AIDS activists arrested April 11th outside the House Majority Leader Eric Cantor's office. February 4th, Occupy DC was raided in a massive operation. U.S. Park Police used a helicopter, Humvee, horses, and more than 100 officers and cleanup crew to forcefully evict the Occupy DC encampment at McPherson Square, which had been in existence since October 1st. As the eviction was underway, occupier Jason McGahey asked Park Police officers to consider the direction the country was taking.
What we are fighting against is the rise of fascism. What is going on in the United States and in Europe is that we are becoming IMF'd. We are experiencing the same conditions that we have been imposing upon a majority of the world for decades. What is going on in this country is a rise of fascism. As what I've previously stated, that Mussolini said, fascism is where corporations rule a country. As a patriot, and I hope that you are, you have the responsibility to educate yourself. Look into Smedley Butler. Look into Alec. It is the duty of all citizens in this nation who believe in democracy to educate themselves. The Federal Reserve is not federal. It is a private banking institution that unconstitutionally is printing our money. Only by the Constitution, only the federal government has the power to print money. Instead, the Federal Reserve is printing it and charging the government interest for it. We are in debt to multinational financial institutions. Corporations have no patriotism. They're not ruled by the Constitution. They are multinational leaders who will care about one thing, the power that money gives them and the control over our lives. Thomas Jefferson said that the tree of liberty must be replenished by the blood of patriots and tyrants. We are out here understanding that it is most likely our blood that will be spilled, but it's the responsibility of a patriot to risk such things. I'm impeding you, I'm imploring you, begging you to read, to understand your history.
The campsite here is compliant, so everybody's got to clear out for now, okay? So you're going to have to exit over there, all right? Anybody left behind is going to be arrested. So just giving you all an option, okay?
Later in the program, we'll play the Fightback's interview with occupier Jason McGahey. This weekend, the Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC, is holding a major gathering at the Marriott Wardman here in D.C. Outside the conference, unions organized an Occupy CPAC demonstration. The lively protest didn't lack for humor, proudly gallivanting around outside where the elite baseball team, the Tax Dodgers, whose pristine jerseys were indistinguishable. On the back, they all had the very same number, 1%. Inside the conference, Republican presidential candidates, including Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, and Rick Santorum, jockeyed with each other to win over CPAC attendees by touting their conservative credentials. But outside the conference, the fight back caught up with another presidential candidate. Meet candidate Walmart. Since the Supreme Court has determined that corporations are people, explained the corporate person, he, Walmart, was going to run for and win the presidency.
I am the food stamp president. My workers are often required to go on food stamps. So, and yes. How
you're,
are you doing, sir?
Good. Your name?
It's convenient because you take food stamps at Walmart, so, right?
We take everything at Walmart. We're going to take gold bullion for Ron Paul's people. We're going to take whatever we can take. Yes, yes, sir. How can I help you?
You're a candidate?
I am candidate Walmart. I'm the first corporation to run for president.
How's it going?
That is right. This woman is going to be my spokeswoman very soon.
She said corporations are people?
Well, they are, my friends. I mean, it's like Mitt Romney said. It's like the Supreme Court said. If corporations are people, they should be able to run for president, which is why I'm running for president.
How's it going?
It's going very well. It's going very well.
Which political party are you in?
Right now, we're running in the Republican in the Republicans, but you know, we're looking at maybe running as a independent candidate in the fall, potentially.
And you were talking just a little bit ago about being insulted about the Newt Gingrich being the food stamp president.
Well, Newt Gingrich called Barack Obama the food stamp president, which some people found it insulting because it was like incredibly racist. But I found it insulting because I am the food stamp president. My workers, many of them are on public benefits, public assistance, because I don't pay them enough. And so if anybody should get that title, it should be me. Walmart.
Some people make the claim.
Maybe.
Some people make the claim that, well, D.C. is actually ground zero for the next Walmart push. Six stores are slated to come here.
I am aware of that, yes.
Some people make the case that that's bringing jobs in. Others make the case that for every two jobs Walmart creates, three are destroyed. That's the new report in New York.
Well, I'm not really interested in what people say against me. I mean, look, my jobs, we pay low wages, shoddy benefits. But, you know, when there's nothing else, what are people going to do? I mean, Walmart, we want to bring that, the low wages, we want to bring them everywhere. We want to take them to the whole country, and that's what we're here talking about today.
It's not just the effect on the country. Walmart, many of its products are produced in sweatshops. There's been numerous reports.
I don't really know anything about that, so I can't really comment.
But you're pretty
well ahead
about details.
Well, we make sure that we bring those kinds of sweatshops to everywhere in this country. I mean, yeah, there are sweatshops in China, but if you elect Walmart president, we'll bring those sweatshops everywhere. And it'll be like that everywhere. It's going to be great.
How much money do you plan on spending on your campaign?
Whatever it takes. I mean, I'm worth $90 billion, the Walton family is worth, and they're kind of bankrolling this whole thing. So, you know, we're going to spend whatever's necessary to win.
You think campaign finance laws might get in your way?
No. And if they do, we'll just buy some congressmen, some more congressmen, and we'll have them change the laws.
Any final thoughts you care to share?
Vote Walmart. Vote Walmart early. Vote Walmart often.
And if the,
and anybody that wants us to buy their vote, we absolutely will.
What's the going rate?
Right, right. Well, it depends. I mean, you know, we negotiate it on a case-by-case basis.
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
That's presidential candidate Walmart, who campaigned for votes outside the CPAC conference. He was dressed sharply in a jacket emblazed with dollar signs. When we come back, we'll be speaking with Matthew Kavanaugh, who was among the AIDS activists arrested outside House Majority Leader Eric Cantor's office on April 11th.
Ain't no need of looking down. Ain't no need of looking down. There's no jobs on the ground. There's no jobs on the ground. Ain't no need of looking down. Ain't no need of looking down. There's no jobs on the ground. There's no jobs on the ground. Whoa, 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 whoa. Mama, mama, can't you see? Mama, mama, can't you see? What's he back done for me? What's he back done for me? Ain't no need to looking down. Ain't no need to looking down. There's no jobs on the ground. There's no jobs on the ground. underground.
Those are some of the sounds from this weekend's protests outside the conservative CPAC conference here in D.C. This is The Fight Back, thefightback.org. April 11th, D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray went to jail along with 40 others, including six sitting council members. The group committed an act of civil disobedience when they sat down in the middle of the road outside the U.S. Capitol in protest over congressional interference and how the district spends its own dollars. Also on that day, a dozen activists were arrested outside the office of House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, who proposed cuts to the district HIV/AIDS funding as well as needle exchange program. The group, which included Mayor Gray and six council members, had received light sentences amounting mostly to no more than $50 fines. However, the AIDS activists, who arrested around the same time for much the same reason, also at the U.S. Capitol, are facing more serious charges. This week, on the steps of the John A. Wilson Building, Matthew Kavanaugh, one of those arrested April 11th, called on U.S. Attorney Ron Machen to drop the charges against the AIDS activists.
This is Matt Kavanaugh. I'm with a group called Health Gap and D.C. Fights Back, a network of AIDS activists here in the District of Columbia. We are here today because in April, I, along with Antonio Davis, who will speak in a moment, along with nine other people, were arrested outside the offices of Republican Majority Leader Eric Cantor. You may remember that we were arrested the same day as the mayor was arrested. At that moment, Representative Cantor was in the middle of massive budget cuts to AIDS service programs across the world that we estimate would have cost 2 million lives. And he and other Republicans were proposing a budget that would have banned the funding of needle exchange here in the District of Columbia in a huge assault on people's health and public health here in the District of Columbia. For that reason, the mayor, the city council chairman, and numerous city council members all took action, direct action that day, and were arrested. Some of us, however, were treated very differently. We were arrested the same day, protesting the similar things, and you will see from the documents that we've been able to distribute that according to the U.S. Attorney's Office, they claim that all we did was sit down and chant. All we did was speak. And yet, unlike the mayor and the city council chairman, who were given a $50 fine and let go home, we have now been through 9 months, five court appearances, and three different prosecuting officials, each of whom has brought in new requirements, made new demands, and required new things. We are deeply worried that new policies under the U.S. Attorney Ron Machen are criminalizing dissent, and in fact, are targeting specifically those who can most least afford to be targeted and targeting those who are HIV positive. We're asking him to drop the charges.
That was Matthew Kavanaugh speaking at Thursday's press conference and protest outside the John A. Wilson Building. Antonio Davis was also arrested April 11th outside Eric Cantor's office. Davis, who is HIV positive, faces the possibility of spending 6 months behind bars for his participation in the nonviolent act of civil disobedience. In order to alleviate his pain and improve his appetite, Davis, who's from Philadelphia, has been prescribed medical marijuana by his doctor. Despite the fact that medical marijuana is allowed under D.C. law, Davis now faces the possibility of jail time for having failed his drug tests. At Thursday's press conference, Davis had this to say.
My name is Antonio Davis. I am living with AIDS, and I am a member of ACT UP Philadelphia, an AIDS activist group. I work as a paralegal and as a counsel. I'm here because the U.S. District Attorney seeks criminalized dissent, punishing those who speak out. Last April, Representative Eric Cantor and the Republican House planned to cut hundreds of millions of dollars of global HIV plans, as well as put a ban on funding for needle exchange planned here in Washington, D.C. I will not go into details because I am being prosecuted, but I will say that we were charged with unlawful entry. What can I say about that is that it was a non-violent protest to put awareness to the cuts that were going on. I remember the same day that Washington Mayor and much of City Council was arrested that same day protesting against Republicans' budget cuts, including needle exchange. But unlike the mayor, we were not treated fairly. We did not get a small fine and were set free. Instead, we were put through a ridiculous process demanded by the U.S. attorney, and now I am facing trial. With that trial, that gives me a maximum of 6 months in prison and a conviction and the conviction that may and hindered my paralegal license as well as my adoption process. I have traveled back and forth from Philadelphia here numerous times, 5 times in different set promises by the government. I have done over 64 hours of unpaid community service at the request by the U.S. Attorney's Office. I'm here today and still here submitting to the U.S. District Attorney's letters from my doctor from Temple University Hospital HIV Comprehensive Program attesting that I am under her order to use marijuana as a resource to my health conditions. I have been diagnosed with AIDS, and because of my HIV status, I've also just been diagnosed with avascular necrosis, which is AVN. It's a bone, deaf, joint disease. I had a major surgery on my arm, on my shoulder just recently, and I have to have another surgery on my left arm as well as all of my hip, both of my hips. I take over 9 medications, and with that marijuana, it also gives me an appetite because I really don't have an appetite when I take up the 9 medications. Also, within the last 2 months, I have lost 20 pounds. Every other month, I lost 10 pounds, gained 2, then lose 10. I've been prescribed medical marijuana because it's the only thing that works for me in my health conditions. I've also been prescribed Percocet, which gives me a high side of strong side effects that just doesn't help me perform a daily life or do my natural work performances as far as employment. I do not use marijuana as a substance to get high. It's for the purpose of medication only for my conditions. In regards to what the U.S. District Attorney is doing, it is ridiculous because this was a non-violent action of freedom of speech in the first place. And some activists has agreed to stay away from the building and stay away from demonstrations and being rearrested, but still we're going through this trial process. And furthering, to give people living with HIV/AIDS a chance, I've been put through this situation, gained massive pain in my body, lost weight, but still on trial. It is hindering my health conditions as well as my mental health conditions as well. Let's be clear. I believe deeply in freedom of speech, especially when it affects the lives and the stakes of people living with HIV/AIDS as well as other protesters to fight against the right-wing policies to save lives. I will continue to speak out on these issues knowing that there are consequences. But the U.S. District Attorney acts unjust, and this should not be the policy of the Obama administration and must be stopped for all peoples in my situations. I ask that the U.S. District Attorney, Ron Machen, look at this case, talk to the prosecutors involved, look at the 64 hours of unpaid community service, look at the nonprofit work that we have done, look at my previous criminal records, which shows that I have no conviction, and look at over the last 10 months of everything that we've been going through as activists and as protesters and someone living with HIV/AIDS. I ask that he look in his heart to make a reasonable decision and let those entered into the pretrial services diversionary program or to drop the case and dismiss all charges against all protesters. And also to not waste the time of the federal budget resources.
That was Antonio Davis speaking outside the John A. Wilson building on Thursday. Davis, who's HIV positive and has been prescribed medical marijuana by his doctor, faces the possibility of a 6-month jail sentence for failing a drug test, which the government mandated after he committed an act of nonviolent civil disobedience. Joining us in the We Act Radio studio to discuss the situation further is Matthew Kavanaugh, Director of U.S. Advocacy for Health Gap Global Access Project. Along with Antonio Davis and 10 others, Kavanaugh was arrested April 11th outside the office of House Majority Leader Eric Cantor. Welcome, Matt Kavanaugh.
Thanks for having me, Pete.
Thanks so much for being here. We'll talk about this situation. It's quite interesting. A number of issues come up here, but take us back to April 11th.
So there's only so much that I can comment on since we're being prosecuted as we speak. But the basic elements of the case is that the prosecutor says, and this is their words in court, they say that we sat down and chanted outside the office of Majority Leader Cantor. We were arrested and we were charged with unlawful entry. Now, you guys may remember this is also the day that the mayor was arrested. This is a moment when we had the Republicans, led by Majority Leader Cantor, trying to push through a number of just really painful budget cuts, as well as denying the district its right to actually use even its own money and federal money to support needle exchange here in the district. So we saw global cuts, federal cuts, national cuts. It's why the mayor was arrested, why the council chair was arrested, and it's why a number of us decided to be involved in an action that day.
Talk about where we are in this country with regards to HIV and AIDS.
So today we've got a situation where HIV and AIDS has been off the radar for a lot of people, and yet not for many of our communities, right? Anybody living in the district knows full well that the epidemic continues to rage in the United States. And in urban areas across the country, you've still got huge rates, especially among gay men in the United States, especially among gay men of color. But also throughout in the district, we have a generalized epidemic in which people of a variety of sexual backgrounds, men, women, straight, gay, but you see it also especially in the less wealthy sections of this city, where we are right now, where most of us live, where many of us live. It's these places, not the centers of Georgetown, where HIV in the district is. And so we were saying, the mayor was saying, the city council chair was saying to Majority Leader Cantor, this kind of an epidemic has to be addressed, and you can't cut funding to this.
DC's position, its lack of statehood, is problematic on any number of levels, but when it comes to HIV and AIDS, the Congress preventing the district from spending its own money on needle exchange has cost lives.
And this is shocking. This is something that should be nationwide news, should be front and center. The Congress of the United States has in many ways, right, treated us like a colony and acted in that way. And one of the ways that they've done that is to prevent us from using money raised from taxpayers here, raised from us, district taxpayers, to actually do high quality public health programs, which includes exchanging syringes, dirty syringes for cleaning syringes to make sure that we don't spread HIV. It's something that's been proven to work. You've got places like Vancouver, British Columbia, New York City, Seattle, where you've got proven studies that show massive, massive declines in HIV rates when you can make sure that people can get access to clean syringes, right? A harm reduction approach. And yet here we are in the District of Columbia. Instead of having massive declines, we've got skyrocketing rates over the last decade to the point now where we're finally getting some syringe programs in. There's a direct correlation there. Congress members' decisions to ban us from using our own money to get clean needles and to save lives has directly cost lives in the District of Columbia.
You mentioned D.C. situation is having a generalized epidemic, if I got your words right, when it comes to HIV and AIDS. What's the epidemic? Is 3% or 1%?
1% of the general public or more, and we're looking at a 3% rate in various parts, much higher than that. Yeah, or 3% across the board, higher than that in various places. So Ward 7 and 8 looking at 7% rates. Gay men in this city looking at rates even higher than that. There aren't studies that are any good of gay men of color in this city, but hugely rates even higher than that, right? Among people who use drugs in this city, high rates as well. We have, the reason why we call it a generalized epidemic is that we've moved out from subsectors of the population being, disproportionately HIV positive to a situation where everyone living in the district is at higher risk for HIV. We are a city dealing with HIV on a day-to-day basis. We all know someone who's HIV positive. We all know people that have died in the last decade. This is the kind of thing that's a public health emergency for the district.
And how well are we dealing with it in the district with gentrification and pushing people out who are the most vulnerable, sometimes the quote-unquote progress that can be seen with demographic numbers may in fact be due to just pushing people out who are the most vulnerable. What's your sense of how well we are in fact dealing with the problem of HIV, treating people as well as preventing the disease?
You know, that's exactly right, Pete. And we've got a kind of couple of things to think about. So one is, you know, one thing that we know has been proven to prevent HIV is housing, right? And it's an interesting thing that we don't think about, right? We think about condoms prevent HIV. We think needles, you know, clean needles prevent HIV. But so too does having a place to make sure that you know where you're going to be able to sleep that night, to not have to trade sex for a bed. Right? To think about those things. So stable housing has been shown, proven to be an HIV prevention mechanism. And yet in this city, we have an absolute affordable housing crisis. And in fact, there are over 600 people on a waiting list that's housed at HOSTA here in the district, right? That is a waiting list of people with HIV who have no stable housing. That kind of thing is hugely impactful in the district. And as you were saying, that's only the people that made it into the district, put themselves on a list, and haven't just been pushed out of the district, right? Because so many people have been priced out. So many people are ending up, you know, very, very far away from their jobs, very, very far away, way out in the suburbs, away from affordable medical care, right? In the district, we have a couple of really great providers, but, you know, several of those providers that used to provide services actually in, you know, in the surrounding counties no longer do. And so you've got an epidemic that's not just the district, but is also kind of DMV-wide.
It's interesting that I think a lot of people associate wearing a condom with protection from HIV, but you're talking about housing issues.
Exactly. And so what you're talking about there is structural interventions, right, where you are disproportionately likely to be HIV positive if you don't have stable housing, right? And the reason is, right, that you've got folks that are making decisions that aren't necessarily the best for them that's based solely on where are they going to be able to live. So like I'd mentioned, you know, one is you've got folks across, you know, across the district who tonight are probably going to be pushed into trading sex for a place to live. And that's a kind of thing where you're, you know, if you don't have employment, which the district is facing huge unemployment rates, as we all know, right, you're more likely to be in that situation. And if you don't have stable housing, then you're more likely to be in that situation. And those are times when it's really hard to get your partner to wear a condom.
Matthew Kavanaugh, so these are some of the issues that you were raising as you sat outside Eric Cantor's office on April 11th. And while you can't speak too much to the case, I wanted to play the comments of Christine Campbell. She spoke with you outside the John A. Wilson building on Thursday. Christine Campbell is a third-generation Washingtonian and vice president of national advocacy and organizing for Housing Works. She was with you outside Eric Cantor's office, and here's what she had to say outside the John A. Wilson building Thursday.
Good morning. I am a third-generation Washingtonian living in Ward 6, and we are very happy that the mayor actually stood up to fight for our rights to be able to have control over our funds in D.C., and on the very same day on April 11th, these activists here did the same thing. I was there when they were outside of Cantor's office. I was there and saw that there was no violence. There was no property destruction. We were pretty much just standing up for our rights to make sure that district residents had the ability to govern and have pretty much home rule. So we are calling on the Attorney General to make sure that these charges are dropped and that these activists are treated the same way as our mayor was treated on that very same day on April 11th. Thank you very much.
That's the voice of Christine Campbell. You heard what she had to say. How is it she was there, witnesses, this is a nonviolent act of civil disobedience, you're facing prosecution, Antonio Davis is facing a possibility of 6 months in jail. This seems out of proportion.
It's incredibly out of proportion. So the U.S. attorney, Ron Machen, is appointed by President Barack Obama. He serves under Attorney General Holder. He has decided for some reason, right, that we are to be targeted. He's done a couple of things. Number one, he's decided to charge us, you know, with unlawful entry instead of just dropping the case, right? This was a free speech case, very easy for him to just decide this is not worth government time to prosecute. Regardless of that, he also has decided in a very, very strange turn of events for me that we're going to require all people arrested in the District of Columbia, regardless of what you're charged with, apparently, to undergo 3 negative drug tests. Now, this is an incredible invasion of privacy. To say that because someone was standing up for their rights, because someone was they accuse us of sitting and talking loudly. Because, you know, if someone were doing that, the fact that they would have to be subjected to 3 negative drug tests is hugely, I would argue, inappropriate. And so we have one of our friends, Antonio Davis, who is also facing these charges. He's someone who's living with HIV. He's actually living with a full AIDS diagnosis. He's actually got something called avacular necrosis, which means that his joints are basically decaying because of AIDS-related reasons. And he's in a situation where he's already had his one shoulder replaced. He's going to have the other shoulder replaced. Both of his hips are going to have to be replaced. He has and has submitted to the U.S. attorney a letter from his doctor that says, you should be using marijuana to make sure that you're able to eat, right? And to cut off the pain, to make sure that you can keep on working despite being in constant pain. The U.S. attorney has said he won't even consider dropping the charges until Antonio violates what his doctor is telling him to do, right? Goes off of the use of medical marijuana for which he has a letter. That's the only way that the U.S. attorney would consider dropping the charges. Other people in the same situation are kind of good to go. They're walking free, as is the mayor who wasn't asked to be drug tested. I'm very confused about the situation.
What do you suppose is the reason for the difference in treatment that you've seen from the mayor, council members? There was 41 individuals arrested that evening, and the disparate treatment that you've seen. Do you have any sense of why that might be?
Well, I think we're seeing an across-the-board push from this U.S. attorney for some reason to really crack down on activists, to crack down on people engaged in nonviolent civil disobedience. So people out front of the White House have also been charged disproportionately recently. I would argue, you know, that when you're the mayor and you're the city council chair, it looks very bad for anyone to charge you with anything. And so they got off on basically a parking ticket where it didn't, you know, the U.S. Attorney's Office said, no problem, you don't even have to come here, right? We'll just charge you under a separate thing and you'll get a parking ticket. For us, they've decided to take us through the whole system. Now we're in a situation where it's completely up to the U.S. attorney. There's a judge in the case who has said, this is ridiculous, why are you doing this? But he has even no control. It's completely the U.S. attorney, Ron Machen. It's up to him to decide whether we get to do what's called a deferred prosecution agreement, which is standard in a case like this. And yet, for some reason, he's denying it to us.
Do you think this could deter future activism?
I think that's absolutely true. And I think that that's honestly the intent. I don't know how you would understand this besides saying he's trying to make it as difficult as possible for activists in the city and as difficult as possible for folks who might take purely nonviolent direct action. To me, it's a really bad sign that we need to address.
I want to play the comments of Charles King, president of Housing Works. He said activists are not going to be deterred by this prosecution. He said persecution of AIDS activists. He said, quote, anybody who knows anything about the history of the AIDS epidemic knows that every single progressive policy has happened because people were willing to take to the streets, because people were willing to engage in sit-ins.
For Housing Works to be here to stand up on behalf of these defendants, these folk who've engaged in civil disobedience. Housing Works is proud of the fact that we were actually born out of ACT UP New York, the first direct action group organized to fight AIDS. Anybody who knows anything about the history of the AIDS epidemic knows that every single progressive policy, all of the money, everything that has been done to get a handle on this epidemic has happened because people were willing to take to the streets, because people were willing to engage in sit-ins, because people were even willing to drop a condom over Jesse Helms' home. This July, the International AIDS Conference is going to be held right here in Washington, D.C. And I want to promise the U.S. attorney that this aggressive prosecution, this persecution of AIDS activists is not going to deter us. We are planning to bring thousands of people from all over the country. We are planning to engage in civil disobedience because we want to see this epidemic come to an end here in the United States and around the globe. And we know that civil disobedience is a powerful way to make that happen. So my message to the Obama administration, to the Attorney General Holder and to the U.S. Attorney prosecuting this case is this is not going to deter us. If anything, this is going to galvanize us. We are going to be here this summer in force, and we intend to keep him very busy.
That's Charles King, President of Housing Works, speaking Thursday outside the John A. Wilson Building. Matt Kavanaugh, your response.
Charles is right, and I think, you know, one of the things that he says there, and I think that it's spot on, right, is that if you look at the history of HIV, but frankly, if you look at progressive social change in this country, it has come because people have stood up and said no. They've stood up and said, we're going to put sand in the gears of the government when it's doing wrong. We're going to put sand in the gears of business when it's doing wrong. And we're going to stand up and demand that people come before profit, that people come before the needs of the right wing. And this is exactly what we're facing right now in this country. We see huge attacks on social services. We see the rich getting, you know, the income gap getting huge, the rich getting richer. Meanwhile, district residents and folks around the country living, especially those living with HIV, are falling farther and farther behind. And the only way I think we stop this is if the citizenry stands up, if we see people occupying throughout the country, whether it's, you know, McPherson Square and the Occupy movement there, or whether it's AIDS activists in the Capitol building. As Charles was saying, the International AIDS Conference comes to Washington, D.C. in July. That's something that happens every other year in a different city around the world, and this year it's coming to Washington, D.C. It's going to be a huge focus on the Obama administration, on the Congress, on both the Republicans and the Democrats. What have they done for people living with HIV? I think the president has some things that he can stand up and be proud of. I think the president has some other things that he really should be ashamed of. And so I think we're going to call those out, as well as calling out the right wing that is trying as hard as it can to make sure that we move as much money into the hands of the rich and as many policies that benefit the kind of tiny, tiny little 1% as we possibly can, at the expense of people living with AIDS, at the expense of people with cancer, at the expense of anybody that needs health care in this country. And that's the kind of thing that's going to happen. To me, it's deeply disturbing to see the U.S. attorney cracking down on nonviolent, non-destructive civil disobedience actions. That, to me, is a very bad sign, and I think we're only going to return kind of stronger afterward.
The International AIDS Conference coming to D.C. also may shine a spotlight on the district's HIV-AIDS situation. It's quite embarrassing to have an epidemic in numbers this high.
Absolutely. Here we are, as we all know, in the nation's capital, and yet official Washington seems not even to notice the district, seems not even to notice that a stone's throw from the Capitol building, we have the highest HIV rates in the country. The fact that we've got right-wing Republicans overturning our intentions and, in fact, denying us the ability to exchange people's needles is outrageous. The fact that we've had such underfunding of programs is outrageous. And the fact that we've got such persistent unemployment and such persistent homelessness and joblessness among, you know, district residents, I think all of that's going to be highlighted in a context of a conference that's looking internationally. When we've got rates that are on par with, you know, a good chunk of the continent of Africa, then people are going to have to question what's wrong with our politicians. Why aren't they standing up and prioritizing the citizens of this of the district?
Do you have a sense of when your situation will be resolved?
Well, we're waiting to find out. So May 7th, Antonio and a number of other people are due back in court. I am, as we speak, deciding whether or not I'm going to be back in court or whether I'm going to jump through yet another hoop for the U.S. attorney and redo community service that we did. I spent a lot of time in the service of the community, so I have no problem with that, but they've required that we do 32 hours of community service and then decide that it wasn't good enough, and we have to do 32 more hours of community service with a different group, and back and forth and back and forth. They're trying to make this as hard as possible. I am hopeful that before we get anywhere near May, the U.S. attorney, Ron Machen, will actually step in, because what we've got is mid-level prosecutors who I think are making a horrible mockery of the system. And I'm hoping that he will get the message, the political message, from members of Congress, from district residents, from anybody that can call or email, and from our kind of activist space here, that this is unacceptable and that the charges need to be dropped.
Any final thoughts you care to share, Matt Kavanaugh?
you know, this is exactly the moment when, you know, in kind of in history where I think we make some decisions. We make some decisions about whether or not we're going to stand up and say no more, whether it's the right wing, you know, attacks on us, or whether it's people coming in sheep's clothing like the Democrats that are controlling, you know, both Congress and the city, I would say. The district and all of us have to decide, are we in the next few years going to step up and kind of take the reins of power here in the district and make sure that people living with AIDS, but also people across the district, have the power to actually keep themselves safe and healthy? Or are we going to see another generation of people living with HIV and another generation of people living with in poverty? I'm hopeful that we'll kind of turn the corner in the coming years.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Pete.
We've been speaking with Matt Kavanaugh, Director of U.S. Advocacy for Health Gap Global Access Project. When we return, we'll hear from Occupier Jason McGahey, who spoke with the Fight Back as U.S. Park Police raided Occupied D.C. at McPherson Square last week.
Because this is where they buy the politicians. Because this is where power has its seat. Because 99% of us are suffering at the mercy of the madmen on this street. Because all of us are victims of class warfare being waged on us by the 1%. Because these greedy banksters rob the country, leaving us without the means to pay the rent. Because the last time that we had a decent government was about 1932. Because we the people are supposed to run this country, but instead it's all run by and for the few. Because now we know the rich do not pay taxes, but when they need a hand, it's us who bail them out. Because we suspected we lived in a plutocracy, but suddenly of late there is no doubt. So we're gonna stay right here. We're gonna stay right here. Because both my parents lost their seats. Because I have never opened an account. Because the interest on my credit card just doubled, and now I can't pay the minimum amount. Because these budget cuts are just immoral, with our schools as overcrowded as they are. Because there are no buses where I live, but I can't afford to drive a car. Because so many of us don't have health insurance, the rest of us have it, but it sucks. Because the rich are flying in their private jets, while the rest of us are slogging through the muck. Because capitalism isn't working, this system has just failed to produce. Because the 1% are prospering, while the rest of us just suffer their abuse. So we're gonna stay right here. We're gonna stay right here.
That was David Rovics, Occupy Wall Street. To hear the Fight Back's interview with Rovics at the Occupation at Freedom Plaza, visit thefightback.org. February 4th, Occupy DC was raided in a massive operation. U.S. Park Police used a helicopter, Humvee, horses, and more than 100 officers and cleanup crew to forcefully evict the Occupy DC encampment at McPherson Square, which had been in existence since October 1st. As the eviction was underway, Occupier Jason McGahey attempted to engage the police about the direction of this country. Afterwards, he spoke with the Fight Back.
It's interesting. There was a guy, I have been trying to explain to all of the officers why we're out here, why we're concerned, what we're fighting for and what we're fighting against. And as I'm defining fascism and the concerns of how laws that are being passed and the rise of corporate power, as fascism defined by Mussolini, is when corporations rule the country and how corporations are increasingly ruling our country. As I'm explaining this to him and telling him to look up Alec, to look up Smedley Butler, to look up the Poor People's Campaign, where Martin Luther King was fighting against such things, he was gripping his baton and smiling at me, staring into my eyes, and gripping it, wishing he could beat me with it. And as I'm calling him out and saying, what kind of a person does that make you? if you're wanting to beat somebody, for asking you to think for yourself and to educate yourself, you continue to grip
Park police with shields are now coming to clear out the area.
Yeah, they're trying to destroy what's left of our homes, of our camp. They're trying to finish destroying the resurrection of Resurrection City, the continuation of the dream that Martin Luther King was fighting for the dream of economic rights, what he called the second phase of the civil rights movement. They're trying to destroy it in the hopes that this will be whitewashed out of American history, just as the Poor People's Campaign was. But what they don't understand is they may evict an encampment, but you cannot evict an idea for which its time has come.
That's Occupier Jason McGahee speaking at McPherson Square as the eviction of Occupy DC was underway. Earlier in the morning, before it was clear that U.S. Park Police were going to completely evict the encampment, the Fight Back had an extended conversation with McGahee. Your name?
Jason McGahee.
Jason, we met at Occupy Wall Street, I think it was in September. Here we are in February at Occupy DC. Can you describe what's taking place right now?
Well, a few days ago, we erected what we called the Tent of Dreams over the statue of General McPherson here at McPherson Square to symbolize the dreams of a generation that is being ignored by our government, dreaming of housing for everybody. When we live in a nation where there's more abandoned, where there's more foreclosed and abandoned buildings than there are homeless in this country, we dream of education for all, health care for all, jobs for all, the same things that Martin Luther King fought for in his Poor People's Campaign back in the summer of 68, what he was assassinated for, when he tried to bring the cross-sections of American society together to fight for what he called the second phase of the civil rights movement for economic rights. And so we erected the Tent of Dreams, and once it was erected, we were proclaiming our dreams of a better future, of a better tomorrow, saying no more to all of our tax dollars going to imperialist endeavors that benefit the oil industry and multinational corporations by exploiting people all around the world and subjecting to the majority of this country into poverty as well. And so we erected our So we made a statement of our dreams in defiance of the park police saying that we're no longer allowed to sleep within the park after they were put on pressure by Congress. Congress has held a hearing against the park service for allowing us to sleep when they were able to hold this hearing when they're still refusing to go after the bankers and the hedge fund managers who created the collapse of the economy. And it's now, what, 3 or 4 years later, and they're still refusing to say, oh, no, you can't touch the job creators who have caused the recession, that have caused homelessness, and are making billions of dollars off of all of this, and are basically just sitting and laughing as they know they understand that they're the ones controlling this. They're the puppet masters behind the curtain. And so we're out here continuing sustained resistance, just an absolute defiance of the corporate state that is controlling our government and exploiting people all across this nation and across the world. And so we held out. We're still holding out. We set up, there was barricades that were erected around the statue throughout the night in preparation for the police coming in because we lost a hearing earlier today for the right to have a 24-hour notice if there was a potential raid coming in. And so since we lost that, we had a feeling they were going to be coming in full force. So we erected barricades around the statue to try to ensure that the symbol of dreams of a generation wouldn't be destroyed. So the police came in. They tore down. They started tearing down the barricades, and there was a standoff with about a dozen people surrounding the Tent of Dreams, and people had climbed up to the top of the statue just to try to protect the dreams of a generation. And eventually it was negotiated that we would take down our Tent of Dreams, so that it would not be destroyed. So that way, a symbol of our hopes, would not be destroyed, in the interest of corporate power and control. And instead would be preserved as a symbol, to be brought out again on another day to continue to fight. about four people stayed within the around the statue in continued defiance, refusing to leave, to just symbolically show that we're not giving up, we're not going anywhere. Occupy Wall Street, Occupy DC, Occupy everything. We're not only just fighting for ourselves, we're fighting for all the generations that are to come after us. Our nation is heading in a very terrifying direction. There's groups called ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, that are actually writing the laws of this country and giving them to the legislators to pass. SB 1070, the anti-immigrant law in Arizona, was written by corporations for the for-profit prison industry. The Koch brothers have been funding the Tea Party, who are individually tied for the fifth richest people in the country with $25 billion apiece, and they're funding, manipulating the people who are losing their jobs and homes, who are pissed off at the government, rightly, but not understanding the corporate interest in it all. And so we're attempting to symbolically reach into the soul of the nation and understand that we're coming to a point where we have to fight back. Our liberties are being under attack. Our rights as a nation, as a people, are being under attack. Obama just signed the NDAA on New Year's Eve, when most people are out celebrating the New Year's and not paying attention to what's going on in national politics. So he signed the NDAA, which basically is the end of habeas corpus in this country, the right to a trial by jury, where now any American citizen who is so-called committing a belligerent act against the United States, which, when our nation can't even define torture, they're not going to be allowed to define belligerent, which basically means that eventually any act of disobedience to the corporate state could wind us up being held in indefinite detention without a right to a trial, without a right to a lawyer. And so we're fighting against at the right to sound unduly paranoid or provocative. I truly believe, with everything that's going on, with the rise of corporate power, there's a quote from Mussolini, the fascist leader of Italy, that always sticks out in my mind, where he defined fascism as when corporations rule a country. And when corporations are writing our laws, when the Supreme Court decided in Citizens United that corporations can buy off our politicians like never before, that the level of corporate control is reaching all new heights, and the level of power is coming to a head. And as people are becoming increasingly defiant against that, and as our environment continues to deteriorate and resources become harder to obtain, the crackdown will intensify. And I think the American people need to start becoming aware of what all of these things mean as they're coming together, and realize that we have to fight now for our futures. I'm 26 years old. I don't have any children. One day I would like to, but to be honest, I think it would be very difficult for me to bring a child into this world, understanding that the Hansen, the NASA climatologist, said that we have 5 years to figure out and start putting controls upon climate change. Otherwise, it will start spiraling out of control to what we can handle and put a stop to. It's about the effects in the environment are about 30 years later of when the amount of carbon that's gone into the environment, with the increase of earthquakes, tsunamis, it's a very warm winter, just increasing weather abnormalities. I'm from Illinois. There was a severe drought in Illinois and in Texas. And as these weather abnormalities become increasingly more severe, food instability will increase, as the world population is about 7 billion right now, and there's already increased severe food insecurity. Somalia and southern Ethiopia and northern Kenya have all been experiencing the worst famine in 50 years. And things like that are going to be increasing. And less than around 2.9% of the world is freshwater, and it's depleting and being polluted. And most of the politicians that you hear when they talk about how do we fix the economy, the only terms you really hear are the notion of perpetual growth. We need growth, growth, growth. but if only 2.9% of the world is freshwater, and it takes enormous amounts of freshwater to produce anything, then we're virtually destroying the most essential aspect of survival for everything on this planet. I just basically think that Occupy's been around since September. There have been movements all around the world that have been fighting for longer. The Zapatistas in Mexico have been fighting for over a decade. People all around the world are kind of realizing kind of what's going on, and have been experiencing things much worse than people have in America through neoliberal economics that have been destroying world economies for decades, through the IMF and the World Bank, through which the United States and other European countries control a majority voter share through $1, one vote, and can... it's basically neo-imperialism, the same countries that subjected poor nations of color to colonialism for hundreds of years. Virtually as soon as they started getting their independence in the 1960s, many countries in Africa and the Caribbean were then subjected to economic exploitation through the very same countries that had exploited them for generations. And people tend to think that, oh, climate change isn't real, no one's been dying, but millions have been dying over the years through starvation, through other abnormalities, and the numbers will increase. For the sake of all to come, we have to continue to fight. And there's just increasing things to be worried about. And not to sound paranoid, but I think we must, as a nation, understand the history of what our government has done and what the corporations have done through the power of our government. We have to understand what multinational corporations are doing, not only to ourselves, but to people all around the world. Understand that it's, though the struggle manifests itself in various degrees and various forms around the world, it's really one struggle for peoples to rise against oppression, against undue control and repression and exploitation. And we have to be cognizant of the connections to one another as human beings.
Jason McGahee, as we stand here at Occupy DC at McPherson Square, there's a small army of police. They're going through tents looking for sleeping materials. They say it's not an eviction. Other occupiers say it is. But just talk a little about what's taking place at this moment. We got folks in yellow outfits rummaging through, like hazmat-type suits, rummaging through stuff and throwing away sleeping material.
Yeah, there most certainly is a small army here. There was actually a Humvee that was around the corner earlier with a military Humvee with people with, I heard, that had assault rifles. And there was virtually a full cavalry out here on the lawn earlier. But they're ensuring that we don't have any ways to, the winter's been relatively warm, but it still gets pretty darn cold out here at night, and so they're
cold right now.
Exactly, and the sun's out.
Can't imagine sleeping through this.
Yeah, I woke up around 4 or so this morning, and I was starting to shiver a little bit, and I had a couple blankets on there with thin, but now that we're not allowed to have any blankets, the mayors and police departments all around the country are saying they're concerned. They've been raiding us because they're concerned about our health safety. I believe if you're taking away ways to stay warm in winter, you're not at all concerned about our health and safety. And I mean, the fact of the matter is that there have been homeless people that have been sleeping in this park for many, many years. And there's many thousands of homeless people within D.C. and tens of thousands throughout the nation. There are more empty houses that have been foreclosed upon than there are homeless in this country. And so the homeless have been ignored and subjugated and repressed and exploited forever in this nation. And now that people have come out here to stand in solidarity with those who are without homes and to fight for the dream of housing for all and many other things. So we come out to stand in solidarity with them. And so then that's when and the notion that we have a tent up, that there's a very thin layer of protection against the extremes of weather, of sleet and snow and rain.
That's Occupier Jason McGahee speaking at Occupy DC at McPherson Square as park police made their way through the encampment, eventually forcefully evicting the entire park onto K Street. You can listen to the full interview at thefightback.org. Tonight's show is engineered by Mark Taylor. I'm Pete Tucker. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Fight Back.